Welcome to this episode of the Yoga Therapy Hour podcast. Today I have Erin Byron as our guest, and she is so phenomenal, so right on target, so clear, so kind. It just goes to show that long-term yoga practice and sadhana tend to make us into people that show up differently in the world, that know who we are. And I'm not saying we're perfect, but we're working on ourselves. We're in the mud trying to find ways to be happier and healthier and more kind and more clear and speak the truth with kindness. So I loved having Erin as a guest. And we started talking about her personal journey of childhood trauma and then how that led her into her career of being a mental health care professional and a yoga therapist, a mentor to many people who are yoga therapists. But somewhere in the middle, I got curious about what she thinks about all the stuff that's going on in the yoga world right now, the yoga therapy world in the right now. There is a lot going on. If you're not familiar, we've got new organizations popping up. We've got podcasts coming out that are talking about how yoga therapy is not a thing and shouldn't be a thing. We have a lot of people that are unhappy in our community. And I wanted to ask Erin what she thought of all of this. I consider her a wise woman who's been doing this a long time. And so in the middle there, I kind of take it off the rails to try to understand her perspective on our field of yoga therapy and scope of practice. And towards the end, we get back on track with her story and her writing and these gifts that she brings to the world. So I hope you enjoy a podcast that goes from the micro to the macro and back to the micro. All right, let's go meet Erin Byron. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Yoga Therapy Hour. This is Amy Wheeler. We're in the second half of 2025, and we've spent this entire year telling stories of health, healing, and beyond with yoga therapy, yoga, and Ayurveda. I hope you'll join us for the second half of the year where we hear people who are courageous and generous and authentic and kind, telling about their life experience so that they can help others out there who might be going through something similar. Let's get into season 9 and hear more stories about people just like you. All right, on to the show. Welcome, Erin. Thank you for being with us today.
Thanks, Amy. I'm thrilled to be here. I've really been looking forward to our chat.
Erin, where are you joining us from?
I'm currently in Brandon, Manitoba, although my hometown is Brantford, Ontario. I'm visiting family out here on the prairies.
Okay. And I have to ask you, is the shirt you're wearing your favorite color?
It shows up a lot, doesn't it? Yes, there are
I
lots of greens, blues, and colors. They can't decide if they're green or blue. That is definitely. I was at a wedding once and someone approached me, one of my yoga students, and she said, "Erin, I didn't recognize you in purple."
Right. Well, that's the thing. Everything I see with you has this beautiful color, and it's my favorite color too. So I love your branding. Just everything is so soothing and calming.
That's really sweet of you to say, Amy. Thank you.
Well, you are a magnificent businesswoman as well as yoga woman. Yeah,
I
you are. You
listen.
know you are.
I don't. I have a lot of help. I cannot take credit for any of that. I have a lot of help. Thank you, Amy.
And, we're going to be talking about your story today and your history and how you have found a new way to be in the world, a new way to perceive the world, the tools that helped you. And all of that helped you to write a book called Safety in the Body, Foundations in Mental Health Recovery Through Yoga Therapy, Expressive Arts, and Neurophysiology. So we'll tie that in as we kind of talk about your story and all that brought you to be who you are. And I think that's one of the wonderful things I'm noticing about these interviews is that everyone we've talked to has been able to take the trauma, the difficulty, the hardship, and somehow use yoga, yoga therapy, Ayurveda to find themselves, to come home to self, to realize, oh, wow, I lost a part of myself at some point. And now they're going to reclaim it, become sovereign, and turn that into something that can help other people. So,
Yeah, I love it too. To hear you say that, I flashed the 90s. I started practicing yoga. Actually, I first encountered it when I was 10 years old. I didn't know that it was yoga, though. My mom had an exercise book, and our gym teacher needed us to do 5 minutes at the front of the class. And I wound up doing sunbird, all fours, sunbird, and trade sides and head to knee when I was 10.
Wow.
And I was in my 20s, and my mom said, oh, yoga book, and we pieced that together after I was a yoga teacher. But when you were talking about coming home to self just a moment ago, I'd been practicing yoga maybe for only a year in Mississauga, Ontario, with Jay Sharma, credit to my very first yoga teacher. And I would say to people, like, I want to say it has changed who I am, but it's too truthful to have changed who I am. It's taught me who I always was inside. And I was blessed to have a classical yoga teacher, someone who taught us to be introspective so that I could discover that so quickly, so early on in my practice, despite that also coinciding with the time that my post-traumatic stress was peaking.
Yeah, let's get into that in a moment. But I'm just constantly putting posts out on Facebook that yoga is self-awareness, self-reflection, self-regulation, self-actualization, because people don't know that. They truly don't know that that's what yoga does for us. And I think people like you and myself and the Wise Woman Collective that has come together to have an amazing yoga therapy book club, which maybe I'll put a plug for that in the outro of this episode. I think we're all starting to push this message forward that the real work that yoga therapy, and Ayurveda can do is reorganize our inner self so that we remember who we are.
Yes, that I was listening to the podcast with Michelle Fury, your podcast with Michelle Fury recently, and how much the two of you really dove into the technology of yoga, that it is a science for existing, for living, for being who we truly are. And part of who we truly are, the koshas, the layers of our being, we're taught that our essence is bliss. So, in the noise of life bringing us so many challenges, for me, it's a relief to know that there is a science that guides us towards peacefulness, being okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So, where do you want to begin with your story? Because as hard as it is to hear these stories of what has happened to us, especially as women, you become part of this community that realizes, oh, it's not just me. We're together in this. So, where do you want to
Yes.
start with your story?
Yeah, the collectivism of our traumatic stress is important to emphasize and re-emphasize, isn't it? We've been through so many different things. Our journey is simultaneously completely individual and very much the same. That pathway of recovery and knowing the things that work, and not the exact same things are effective for all people, but when we trust ourselves, what is effective for me? What do I need in that moment? The self-trust is a consistent piece. To begin for me, near the beginning, I think is a great place to start, that my traumatic stress or elements of my trauma were highly organized and systematic. So from early on, there was a sense that no one could be trusted. And my brain wired itself around caution, mistrust, fear of abandonment, onwards through my childhood, teens, and early 20s. But it is the connections that, in so many ways, save us, that regulate our nervous systems, that rewire the brain. So I have been blessed in my path to have had really close, genuine friends in high school. And my romantic relationships were with safe people. I think that is just grace and dumb luck, because most of us, when we have the railway tracks of traumatic stress early on just repeat that pattern. So I'm not sure how I escaped that, but I was lucky enough to do that and privileged enough to be educated in psychology so that I could continue helping myself and others.
Yeah, let's stop there for a moment. I heard Gabor Mate say this so many times, but it just recently I heard him say it again. He was talking to this new star, Mel Robbins, and he was talking to her about, the trauma that she had when she was young. And, what it came down to was she didn't have anybody to go to when she was young. There's the original trauma, but then there's being alone and lonely and not having people surrounding you to validate and to comfort and to tell your story to. And so his point to her was, if you had had that, Mel, you wouldn't be carrying those same trauma tracks that you suggest, Aaron. And therefore, the trauma will continue to happen, sadly. And how can we be there to help support and love and comfort and listen to one another to help people pull themselves out, like it sounds like you were able to do.
Yes. So when I was about 12 years old, I thought brains are weird. Like, what's going on with that organ inside our skulls? So I knew from that tween phase of life, I was somehow going to be investigating that into my adulthood. And in school, in high school, they had volunteer opportunities. I volunteered at a domestic violence shelter for 6 months. And one of the residents there said to me, I went straight from my father's house to my husband's house. And that sentiment was echoed again and again. So these women, I think in many ways, saw opportunities to mentor me as a teenager and gave me all kinds of tidbits of wisdom. That one stood out forever. Keep an eye on that, especially knowing that unconsciously we are drawn towards the most loving and the most aversive qualities of our parents, both parents. So that caution really, really helped me. And one of the other things that stands out for me, these might be the only two pieces of advice that really stuck, three actually. The second one was if your children are screaming for food, fry onions, they'll know that food is coming soon. And to give a massage to your partner before you get romantic and receive a massage because relaxation opens us. Those of us who've lived through sexual violence, especially, find it really hard to create a safe pathway into our healthy sexuality. So massage was a great tip. I thank that woman for that.
Those are three very different tips. Fry some onions, have some massage, and don't go straight from your dad's house to your husband's house.
Absolutely.
Oh my goodness.
Absolutely.
Wise women there.
Yeah, and thank you. Let me take the chance, Amy, to thank you for doing this podcast so that we can learn from each other's wisdom because no matter what our background is, we have so much to teach each other onwards through the entire life cycle. Thank you.
It's so interesting because my podcast producer kind of tracks the numbers of how many people listen to the podcast. He'll always give me these reports. And September 2025, we had, I think, 5,500 people listen to the podcast. And he's like, it's just going up exponentially every month now. And I thought, it's because we're telling stories. People want to hear these things. They want to know they're not alone. They want to know other people have suffered and made it through. I think it's really important to tell our stories and use our suffering and wisdom that we gained to help other people.
Yes, from that neurophysiological and nervous system perspective, it's the connection that is the truth in recovery as our brain rewires and yoga rewires our brains in so many different ways, doesn't it? But as the nervous system learns its capacity for regulation, I think that is so huge in healing traumatic experiences. We forget that it's possible to feel okay, to be relaxed, to not be on guard all the time.
I was also listening to another podcast, my favorite one, Shikhar Vedanta, that is called The Hidden Brain. And it's also about neurophysiology and nervous system and all this and the mind. And the new science of healing is all about resilience. It's about adding joy and play and expressive arts. It's about adding goodness and not so much focus on the grief and the loss and the suffering, that there's actually research kind of shifting that, yes, you need to be heard and seen for your suffering, But if you really want to heal, you got to start going in the salutogenic direction as opposed to the pathogenic. So, do you agree with that? What do you think? Because it's a rewiring of the nervous system and the mind.
It is, and because I've been exploring this for so long, since childhood teen years, I intuited this. My mentor, Bob Butera, he for years would say the yogis knew all along what science is starting to prove. We still don't understand all their recommendations or all of their wisdom, but wait 100 years, we'll have it. And in that time, we've learned about neuroplasticity. We've learned about the power of creativity and expressive arts. We've learned about the power of connection just in that last 25, say, year window. But I intuited, like, yes, we need to recover. They used to do this thing in psychotherapy called ab reaction, where they would find ways of you reliving the trauma. And that is really helpful for some people. Some of us need to tell our story in that way and tell our story to ourselves. However, to do the painful, grief-filled, terror-filled work in the absence of joy and playfulness and freedom and laughter and friendship only rehearses the traumatic stress. The brain and nervous system need to be exposed to the other side. And yoga, in its quest for self-truth, who am I? What do I enjoy? What am I curious about? And how can I express those things in the world? Yoga, through that pathway, really reveals those solutions through its inherent wisdom.
And what uniquely brings me joy, right? I had a friend ask me to go to a bar this weekend to listen to some music. That doesn't actually bring me joy. A Saturday with my cats, getting in the hot tub, taking a nap, that brings me joy, right? So each of us has to figure out for us, what does joy mean?
And have permission for that, even if it's against averages, even if it's not what our closest, most tight-knit friends want to be doing. The people who love us love us. If we want to have a day and open up a coloring book and each one of us take a page and do that in parallel, the people who love us will indulge us. We don't need to be saying yes to the things that not only aren't joyful, but so many of these things can steal our joy. If going to a bar, even to hear the best music, is a high-risk activity for us, then the fallout from that decision lasts for days and days versus let's have a walk in the park, let's do something during the daylight hours, and then you can cuddle at home with your pets and read a book or watch your favorite movie.
You know, I think sometimes when we talk this way about adding in joy and finding your true self, there's an element of, are we spiritually bypassing the terror? You have a master's in psychological counseling, yes?
Yes, it's in psychological counseling in the field of yoga therapy. So, the first year of my grad school was creativity and expressive arts for healing trauma, and then onwards into the body work, the meditation, the energy of yoga therapy. So, I was lucky to get in there and get a master's in yoga therapy early on.
Tell me what you think. What's the ratio, or is it a woven like a tapestry between being seen and heard for trauma and suffering versus adding in more joy? Like, what does that formula look like for you when you help people?
Yeah, thanks for clarifying. I follow Judith Herman's three-stage model of trauma recovery, and there's a five-stage model, there's a 12 or 13-stage model, which to me just looks like they're breaking down Herman's model a little bit more. But early on, we need the recognition, we need to be building trust, and we need to understand what safety and recovery even are. So that early phase is a lot of needing people to hear us and believe us. To everyone who's listening, if someone discloses to you and the disclosure makes you uncomfortable or you don't know what to say, all you need to say anytime somebody says something that you don't know what to answer to, say thank you, always thank you, because it's challenging for us to open up. And I believe you. The reason trauma, so many different forms, especially interpersonal traumas, are allowed to continue is the threads of doubt. It is so challenging to disclose, even to our closest friends, let alone a public disclosure. It is not done freely. And those who might say, well, it's easy to lie about it. No, the people who may possibly, rarely, almost never be making up a story, are facing the same backlash as any survivor who truly went through it. I believe you is one of the most powerful things we can say to someone. So in those early stages, that's what that's about. And then that middle stage, Amy, is what we were just kind of talking about. What does bring me joy? And is that okay? Is that safe for me? Does it harm anyone else? And those who give pushback against what I like to do, maybe it's time for me to find some meetups where there are people more like me, and that's okay too. And then the third stage of recovery is building into that new identity and perhaps even offering forth what we can into the world to give back and support those who are in those earlier stages.
Please take a moment with me to go and listen to something a little different, and then we'll get right back to the guest. Many times, as yoga teachers, yoga therapists, or even moms, dads, grandparents, we wonder what's happening with our loved one in between the times we're seeing them. Whether your child went off to college or whether you're a yoga therapist who only sees your client once a month, you might wonder, how are they doing? Well, here at the Optimal State, we have developed a mobile app where people can track how they're feeling mentally, emotionally, physically, and spiritually at different times of day, seasons of the year. And basically, you can see the data. You can see how your 6 to 10 a.m. slot in your day looks and how you usually feel at that time versus your 2 to 6 p.m. How do you feel at that time of the day? And you can see the patterns. You can set a week, a month, a season, and get the aggregate data so you can see what your pattern is. Where do you tend to go out of balance? And the cool thing is, you can just take a screenshot of that summary and send it off to your yoga teacher, your yoga therapist, your parent, your child. It's a really great way to check in. And I think especially for maybe kids that don't want to call their parents all the time from school, they could just show their parent the data, like, okay, I'm doing all right. Here, look at my data for the last 2 weeks. Screenshot, boom, it's yours. Now you can settle down and stop calling me. It could be that, or it could be that your child is not doing well, but they don't know how to say that to you, or maybe your client. And so your client could take a screenshot of their data from the last week and send it to you as they come into the session so you kind of have an idea of what's going on with them. So there's many ways to use it. And in addition, there are wonderful interventions that help people to come into balance. So I hope you'll consider checking out on the App Store. It's called Optimal State App. You just type that in, Optimal State App, and check it out. It's free for the first few weeks, so you have nothing to lose from trying it out and checking out how to track, how to get your aggregate data, how to send that off, and then hopefully how to get some interventions. All right, now let's go back to our guest. I have talked with my friends and family about this so much, that especially that first stage. For instance, my father has a very different recollection of his childhood than his sister does. His sister feels traumatized, feels like her needs were not considered or met in any way, and that there was a lot of bad stuff going on. And my father, who came around maybe 6 years later, he doesn't remember any of that. He didn't feel that. He didn't feel. So just because we say, I believe you, we're not speaking about the truth of what happened. We're just saying, I believe that you are suffering and that you were hurt. And it's not about the accuracy of your statement. It's that you had hurt, and I believe you, and I'm listening, and I'm here.
Thanks for clarifying that, Amy. Yeah, we're not taking court records. We're not vetting for historical purposes. Our lived experience is real and valid. Our lived experiences laid down the pathways in our nervous systems, laid down the wiring in our brain, laid down our perspectives, our approaches, and how we went forth in the world, our decisions for friendships, romantic relationships, careers. That is all within what we experienced, and what we experienced won't hold up in a court of law. Boy, have we ever seen that again and again? It's, I believe who you are. I believe what this was for you. And in siblings, it is really tricky because they were raised by different parents.
Right.
No matter what, who came first, who came second, what the parents were used to, what they weren't used to, what value systems got encoded based on gender or birth order. Siblings weren't raised by the same parent.
I'm the youngest of six, and I'm a girl.
Whoa.
Everybody says, oh, you got it so easy. They were worn out by the time they got to you. You had it so easy. Now, I don't perceive that, but I think my siblings feel like I had some different childhood than they did.
Yes, and like I don't know about you, Amy, most children with more than three siblings were raised by their siblings. So maybe your parents were easier on you, but boy, siblings can dish out some pain.
I say I raised myself. But anyway, another story. You and I did not discuss what we were going to talk about today. This is like an open slate. So anything that you're like, Amy, I don't want to go there, or let's edit that out, just tell me. But I do have a question for you because it's been so prevalent in the yoga therapy world recently. And that is, what is the role of healing our trauma with yoga therapy? I mean, your book is talking about this, right? Building safety in the body through one of the things you have on the cover is yoga therapy. For those of us who don't have a licensed healthcare practitioner license, or maybe even a master's degree or a PhD or something, what's the role of yoga therapy and how can we make sure we're not getting in over our head and out of scope of practice?
I really appreciate you asking that because that is the main thing I do in my everyday clinical practice. Yes, I have one-on-one therapy clients, but most of my practice is doing clinical supervision with licensed healthcare practitioners, but also with coaches and certainly with yoga therapists. And scope is a big part of that we feel this pressure. For one thing, we love our clients. We care about their well-being. We want to do a good job. We want to be excellent at what we do in whatever way that means. And that pressure will sometimes bump us up against the edges of our scope. But whatever a person's scope is, as a coach, as a massage therapist, as a yoga therapist, whatever our scope is, we have brilliant tools to support people with trauma recovery because trauma affects our entire being through the koshas, our five layers that yoga teaches us we exist upon, and through our unique personalities and needs. So, if a client is seeing a person, they're seeing you for you. And the bond, that interrelationship, and what that does to the prefrontal cortex, which the enrichment, the thickening, the more complexity of connections in the prefrontal cortex of the brain, the more resilient we are against fear, the more we are able to think ahead, to feel safe interpersonally. So it doesn't matter what credentials a person has or doesn't have, cultivating that bond is one of the most important things that we can do. And then yoga gives these tools of listening to the body. What does it feel like when I do this? What if I do my mudra this way, like the book says? But what if I do it this way? What if I do it this way? What if I do it this way? What if I join my fingertips together? For the listeners, those people who are driving, I was moving my arms out to the sides and turning at my wrists, raising my arms higher or lower. When we're curious, which adaptable yoga gives us so much to be curious about, the body answers us in that curiosity. And those answers are important, even if it's just like, oh, I would rather spread my fingers wide than have them pressed together or have them in a mudra. That's good info. Why? Because of how much brain space the hands take up, and because we're learning just to listen. Thank you, body, for telling me that. Let alone the effects on the nervous system, let alone the breath work and the power to build confidence or build relaxation through how we're breathing. Yoga therapy has so many tools that other professions do not have access to. So if you're a yoga therapist, bring the yoga because nobody but you can do that.
I just had this perfect example of what you're saying. And I agree with you. We need to be confident in what we bring because it's magnificent. So I work with a research team that is very much into a medical disorder that is connected to stress. And so in all of their literature, they've shown that diaphragmatic breathing really helps with this condition. But my question to them is your client or patient really able to do diaphragmatic breathing? How tight are their little intercostal muscles? So I just showed three simple seated exercises to help kind of expand the chest cavity and get into the intercostals a bit and take some deep inhalations with a little pause. And then asked them, now try diaphragmatic breathing. And they were like, whoa, that is so different, right? So It sounds simple, but if we are experts in diaphragmatic breathing, but we can help the psychologist or the researchers or the integrative physician to understand, like, hey, just telling somebody to do diaphragmatic breathing is might not work, right? So I just think we have to have confidence in our magnificent tool basket and not think we have to do more. We don't have to be mini psychotherapists or mini physical therapists. We've got some great tools.
Yes, and tools that they don't have, and tools taught within the context of a rich 5,000-year-old philosophy from India, that is not what is being taught at the university or graduate level. Thank you for saying that about the foundations of it and how much is missing in the foundational approach to this, where in a yoga therapy session, one-on-one, someone is watching. What is that rib cage doing? How are the hips responding to this breath? What's the jaw doing that very few other professions are trained or will have the time and patience to get into those foundations with their clients? It's really, really important.
All right, I have one more hard question because it's just so related to this and it's in the ether this week. Do you think we should call ourselves yoga therapists, or do you think there would be a better term for us? Because the confusion around we're going to provide some kind of talk therapy or psychotherapy, like, it's confusing for some people. I don't personally find it confusing. There's Reiki therapists, there's massage therapists. I feel like there's art therapists, there's dance therapists. Like, we can use the word, but do you think that makes it confusing? And do you think there'd be a better word for us?
The confusion might not be in the language so much as in the perception. So you are making a great point there. When I'm mentoring yoga therapists who are encountering that and feeling frustrated because their clients come in and they just want to talk to a yoga person, that before they even come in for the first session, let's just give it a sentence or two. I bring you the rich tradition of yoga to support your goals and intentions for being more of who you really are. And then, after a little bit of get to know you or how did it go from your previous session, we say, hey, that's such an interesting thing you're telling me right now. It makes me think of an asana sequence we can do that relates to that. Or let's explore that through varying the kinds of breaths you're taking while you're saying that. Or we did a visualization regarding that last week. Were you able to play with the visualization between then and now? And it brings it right back into the arena of yoga, even though there are talk components. But laying that out first and foremost so people know what they're walking into, and then they're not surprised when we take the talk into a yoga practice.
I love what you're saying. And if we can do that skillfully, people get results. If, say, they were experiencing fear and we gave them a mantra with a mudra to do whenever that fear comes up, if they actually do that little mini practice, I call it a yoga snack,
Yes.
they come back like so shocked, like, oh my gosh, that worked. I can't explain how, but it made me feel so much better in that moment, right?
Within days,
Or minutes.
within
Even sometimes.
days,
Yes.
speaking of not standing up in a court of law, I'm not going to put that in writing, but for how many times I have seen people come back and I'd say, oh, when did you start noticing that? So if I'm booking every other week, they'll come back, they'll tell me what you just said. It's been amazing. I can't believe the difference it's made. Where was this my whole life? Somebody
Right.
just told me about safety in the body. I wish someone had handed me this 60 years ago. And I said, we didn't know 60 years ago. We didn't even know 20 years ago.
We
But
didn't even know 10 years ago. I mean, I think a lot of us intuited it and we're kind of figuring it out, but to have the neurophysiological research to support it, we didn't have that 10 years ago.
it was not there. Now that we have the science backing us up, I love bringing the science to the clients who are a little more doubting. But some of what you're saying there about the fast results also, well, I'm the one saying they're fast results, but some of what makes it work so well is that it's personalized. This is where the talk comes out, is we're listening to that person's experience. What do they need? What's their intention? And as we explore their joy and interests around a yoga practice, we offer them what they're looking for. So diaphragmatic breath, intercostal breathing is really, really terrific for so many people in helping them relax. And other people, it amps them up. Okay, well, maybe you need to be amped if you need a bit of confidence, or maybe you need to calm down if you need a bit of confidence. Maybe we try the breath this way or that way. It's some of the customization that allows it to come through in a helpful way more quickly as well.
I always say it's the difference between a group exercise class and a really skillful physical therapist. Like, we would never confuse those two. Like, I
No.
went to Zumba and I had PT that my doctor recommended for my hip. Why is it so confusing in yoga?
I suspect that some of the confusion, and this is based on my work as a clinical supervisor of yoga therapists, the confusion is in the professional. So, as yoga therapists, depending on our training foundations and depending on our own self-perception and needs, like what do I need as a professional in this dynamic, that skews us into confusion. And if we're confused, our clients are definitely going to be confused. So the more we, as a collective of yoga therapists from the top down, delineate what yoga therapy is, the easier it will be. And I think that's an opportunity for our professional body as well to say that this is yoga therapy and only yoga therapists can do yoga therapy.
100% agree with you. Let's not water down our own profession that we've been trying to build block by block for 20 years or more. In the Indian traditions, over 100 years, yoga therapy has existed in clinics and hospitals and ashrams as yoga therapy, right? So why not stay with that and grow that and be firm about that?
I do imagine that as it gets watered down, it is the watering down that will strengthen the field of yoga therapy because people who need their yoga and get a bit of yoga from their physiotherapist, and I'm a psychotherapist myself, so not to, but from their mental health provider, will see that, oh, that was PT plus some yoga. But when they go to their yoga teacher, who's also a certified yoga therapist, and they get that one-on-one attention, they will see the dramatic difference. I believe that despite what's going on right now, coming out the other side, it will further establish yoga therapy on its own two feet as its own unique and very important approach to well-being.
Yeah, I think, that's really the discussion in our field right now. Who believes that will happen and who believes that PT or the OT or the psychologist that is doing their modality plus some yoga, that people won't just stay with that? Why would they pay extra to have a yoga therapist when it's not covered by insurance and it's not licensed? So it will be seen. Anyway, I think I got us way off track, but some really great discussion.
I love
So
it. Yeah.
let's go back to you. What were some of the first things that made you realize that this yoga thing that you tried when you were 10 or 12 years old actually did something to you? Like, were there any experiences that you had between 10 and 25 that you were like, whoa, you said you were really interested in the brain, but what made you figure this out about that yoga can help me in my trauma recovery?
Well, there's a book by an author called Crescent Dragon Wagon called To Take a Dare. And I read that in my tween years as well. It's about a runaway, had a lot of trouble and found yoga. But I didn't remember yoga was in that till I reread it in my 30s. I was like, it's right here from one of my favorite books. I started taking yoga because I'd be at my health club on a Thursday, and I think it was a step class. Step class, then I'd hang out and do weights for an hour, then an aerobics class, then a yoga class. I thought, like, since I'm here, I'll take, I know. Yeah. Do we all hear what's going on there?
No
So,
comment, no comment.
did not come to me in a healthy way, but it came to me. And I would go home and I'd be like, I don't feel stressed about, I worked in a restaurant at the time. I don't feel as stressed about forgetting to bring extra cheese to table 64. I don't care about that person who was rude to me, the interpersonal dynamics, even all the nightmares and trauma. I could start to sleep with the light off. And again, that happened pretty quickly. And I had the sense that it had something to do with that auto suggestion, final relaxation. Jay did the same. I am relaxing my toes and feet. He did the same progressive auto relaxation at the end of every single class. And then maybe after a year and a half, he would take us in this one-legged balance Natarajasana dancer's pose where you're holding your foot behind you and you lean forward a little bit. And I could never do that pose. I was pretty fit, but I fell out of that pose every class for a year and a half, 3 times a week. And then Jay said, find your center. And I didn't fall out of that posture anymore for the next, 30 years or however long it was. I was then find your center, locked into my one-legged balances. I didn't know what that was. I didn't know what find your center meant, but my cells knew. My nervous system responded to it. So it's more of that idea that I'm more me. I didn't get angry at my coworkers anymore. I didn't get angry at my tables anymore. I felt like there was well-being that I had access to. That not only did I not know I didn't have access to, like I didn't think, oh, I didn't even know it existed. These doors were opened, and that didn't happen because I was seeking anything at the time other than a certain physique.
Wow, that's powerful. And that's how it happens.
And that's how it happens. It's integrative. It's
Yeah.
there already, and yoga is the technology that supports us in peeling off the layers, the kleshas, the obstacles to what is truly possible for us and who we truly are.
Do you think someone has to be open to that, or could they just be completely closed and be doing their Natarajasana every day and their little auto suggestion relaxation, and then something starts to shift in them? Or do you think they have to go in being willing to be transformed?
I've always been interested in transformation. So you make a point that I was primed to have that experience. I wouldn't disagree with that. If we go back to our previous conversation, like when you were talking about joy, finding your joy, if a person is approaching the yoga by following their interests, I think it will naturally happen. And we basically know from the flip side of placebo studies, if we are not open to something being effective, our inner resources will work pretty hard to make sure it doesn't work. We're the mind is very, very powerful. Belief is incredibly powerful. So you can be a doubter, you can be a non-believer, and it still might work. But if you're actually wanting to prove that it doesn't work, you will probably be able to do that.
Yeah, I agree. And so many people that come to yoga, they're not against it. They're like, yeah, I'll give this a try. And then they have that feeling of self-connection and relaxation and self-regulation. And they're like, whoa, what is this? I'm in.
Yeah, I used to joke with my yoga teacher trainees about the power of that relaxation and how much buy-in it brings us. But my joke was like, how many of you cried during your first Shavasana? That is such a common experience. And we don't know why we're crying. We're not necessarily sad about anything, but that nervous system holds on indefinitely. And when it finally has the chance to let down a little bit, sometimes laughter. Or yawning or terror, right, can also happen. But a lot of the time, it's just a very gentle, the eyes are leaking and it's a bit of a relief and it just feels so good.
Yeah. And we also have to acknowledge that it can bring our mind and our intentions inward to what was already there, which is actually not feeling so good sometimes. And you become aware for the first time how much suffering you're actually having, which, Patanjali would say that's the best day of your life, Yoga Sutra 215. But for a lot of us, it doesn't feel that way in the moment.
Yeah, Billy Corgan would say the same thing, right? Today's the greatest day. But I would tell my new yoga students in those weekly classes, you can expect this to feel worse before it feels better. And especially in the cases of certain autoimmune conditions like rheumatoid arthritis, your yoga is going to really, really help you, but give it 3 classes because those first 3 classes, there's going to be a rebound effect. And it's similar psychologically, but for how many students will come back and say, it made my neck and shoulders tighter? Say no, you learned that there's actually a spectrum here and you experienced relaxation, then your body went back to its pattern. But don't worry, fear not. You are doing the things that remove those patterns of unhealth and discomfort.
So, Erin, we just have a couple of minutes left. What did you want to get across today? I've asked so many questions. I'm a very curious person, and I tend to just go down all these crazy roads trying to like satisfy my interviewing interests. But what did you want us to know?
Well, I appreciate your curiosity, Amy, because I want everyone to know everything all at once. And it's really tough to rein myself in. You know, if you look at the spectrum of books that I've written so far, I just mentioned arthritis, which I had the honor, and this might be how you and me got a little closer, Amy, was that I wrote Yoga Therapy for Arthritis with your dear colleague, Stephanie Munoz. And then Yoga for the Creative Soul, which for me was a joy to write, and it was about making joy manifest in people's lives. Almost every page has an activity that is for this purpose of bringing the soul forth through some kind of expressive activity. You don't have to be creative. We're alive. That is creation. Life is creation. So create that way. But I was in such a playful state when I wrote it. I sat on a little dock with my little Bichon Schnauzer cross puppy off leash. I know some people don't like off leash, but he was old then and he was so well behaved. And I just looked at the water. I can type without looking. I wrote Yoga for the Creative Soul looking at the water in the Muskokas at the campus of the Halliburton School of Art and Design. That book is joy in every page. And so I just want people to know that through trusting ourselves, through seeking a yoga therapist and reading the books that are out there. I know, Amy, you have so much to offer through what you've done, and we are part of a Yoga Women's Writers Collective now. So, everybody, please join that. You can click and join right now. And please do trust yourself, trust your breath, trust your body, be curious. Know that as the layers of that onion peel more and more and more, what we are revealing is bliss.
Lovely. So I'll talk more about the Yoga Women's Writers Collective in the outro, but just to highlight your most recent book again, Erin, can you just tell us a little bit about what made you want to write Safety in the Body: Foundations in Mental Health Recovery through Yoga Therapy, Expressive Arts, and Neurophysiology?
Yes, I actually interrupted a book called Complete Recovery, emphasizing that complete recovery from post-traumatic stress is possible. I interrupted that book during the pandemic to write this one, which is for any health provider or person living with mental health issues, post-traumatic stress, or certainly for yoga therapists. To have these concrete tools. So there's the scientific evidence is in there, the foundations of yoga. I am deeply studied in the philosophy of yoga. So I brought that forth here. And activities, again, several activities in every chapter to make it real within each person's own life. What supports me in finding that safety in my nervous system, wiring my brain away from fear towards safety, and to know that we're not alone, right? If there's a whole book that can stand up on this, you know that you're somehow in community. I have gatherings twice a month for free for an hour that people can come to, and we'll play with the concepts in this book together.
Now I'm on your website right now. It's www.erinbyron.com, ErinByron.com. Where on your site would you find those two gatherings per month?
The easiest place to actually find the gatherings is to join the Erin Byron Book Club on Facebook or find me on Instagram because we give little snippets there. We need to add it to the website. We'll intend to put it on the homepage. We want to make it as easy for people as possible, but it's the same link every time. It is the same link. It's been the same link for the last 5 years, 5 years. And
Is
yes.
it free?
And it's free. Yeah.
All right, so for now, it's going to be on the homepage maybe by the time this is
Maybe
out
next
there.
season.
But for now, if you go to IG at Erin Byron MA.
That's me. And on the website, you can sign up for the newsletter because the newsletter sends out that link as well. So it'll be
Okay.
right there in your inbox. You can just click right on through.
Perfect.
Thank you, Amy. I loved your curiosity and having the chance to explore these ideas with you and all your listeners.
And thank you. Thank you for letting me lead us down all these roads. I've been listening to a lot of podcasts this week. I keep an eye on Facebook and what's happening with Yoga Alliance and IYT and now this new American Yoga Council. And I really love to ask leaders in the field, like, what do you think of this? And I heard a podcast yesterday, just a scathing podcast by two leaders that are no longer calling themselves yoga therapists. And I was really taken aback by it. So some of the questions they were discussing, I asked you today because I just wanted to like say, what does anybody else think of this? Should we use the term yoga therapy? And what is scope of practice? Those are all really important questions as we develop this field together.
Yeah, scope of practice is my main thing. So you'll tune me into that podcast. I think we'll see what
Kind of
they.
don't want to promote it, but at the same time, I'm like, oh, we
No.
all have to be thinking about this. So, should I say it? I don't want to critique people on the air, but if you ask me personally, I will tell you podcast.
But you heard it in my answers that I lean towards hope and joy. I believe in our capacity to find a pathway through these things. And that's not to say don't stand up for what's important.
Right.
I was one of the first committees to make sure that we were not giving other registered health practitioners yoga therapy credentials. It's very important that we keep those things separate. But wow, the voices in the field, right? So many
Yes,
perspectives.
it's loud out there right now. And it's important that we stand up and say our opinion and be part of the mishmash that's going on right now. This is how we get to the next place. You cannot avoid these types of discussions and difficulties and cleanse and purify and find your way forward without being brave enough to have conversations that are truthful and authentic, but also we're letting each other have our dignity still.
Yes, there's so many examples in society right now where we have the opportunity to do that, speaking the truth and speaking up for equality. It's a dharma, the yogis would say. It's part of our sacred duty, especially those of us with the privilege to have a voice.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you, Amy.
Thank you, Erin. Thank you, Erin, for being here. And Erin and I recently kind of got reacquainted in this group that we both belong to. It's called the Women's Writers Collective in Yoga Therapy because Erin has written this book that we talked about today. Myself and Marlisa Sullivan have written a book that is going to the publisher any day for review. It will be out in spring 2026. We can't wait to tell you all about it. And so we came together with several other women in this writers' collective to support each other. And what we found is that there are tons of women out there and some men that have written books about yoga therapy. And that we can all support each other. We can have book clubs. We can have a community. So it's kind of grown from authors into inviting all of you to be with us and to do these book club events. It's all free. And we have author spotlights. We'll have one every month where one or two authors will bring their book and then someone else will kind of interview them. And so this Women's Writers Collective is open to everyone to come and learn and listen and be part of the community. It's free. And in November, the book chosen is Yoga Therapy Across the Cancer Care Continuum by Ann Pittman and Lee Labelle. Libel. I'm not sure how to say Lee's last name. And they'll be interviewed by Shawnee Thornton Hardy. So we would love for you to join us. I'll put this in the show notes. There's a website. You just basically go give your email and then it will send you the Zoom link and you can be part of the club. And this is going to be ongoing now. And we're very excited to bring this to our community and to offer something full of goodness to the community for free. So Thank you all for listening. We will see you next week. Have a great one.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We appreciate you as our listeners because without you, there would be no Yoga Therapy Hour. It's your comments, your calls, your emails, your texts of support and well wishes and affirmations that keeps us going. So don't feel hesitant to give us a review if you've been enjoying the podcast. Go wherever it is that you listen, find the review section, and let people know how much you love the Yoga Therapy Hour. It's a small thing that you could do for us that would help spread the word of goodness, benevolence, and help us help all the people out there to suffer less. All right, everybody, have a great week. We'll see you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Yoga Therapy Hour. We wish you a wonderful week. We hope that somehow, in a small way, we've contributed to your well-being so that you can go out and share that well-being with others. That's what life is all about, bringing in the goodness through you and then shining it out to the world. We need you more than ever. So let's all get out there, do good, be good, and have a great week.